Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Dead End Sports Podcast. This is a weekly sports podcast. We like to call it the best couple of hours of your sports week. I am your host, 12 Kyle. And again, welcome to the Dead End Sports Podcast. We've got a lot of stuff to cover. Going to be NBA heavy, get some baseball talk in there as well as our final thoughts. But before we get started, man, got to introduce the homies. First up, my man, BZ430. BZ, what up, though?
What up, though? Just want to give a quick, let the fans know that this will probably be like our last show, kind of like the summer season, and we'll probably get back at it in about a month or so, unless anything crazy happens during this free agency come July 1st that we just got to touch on. But just want to give the fans a heads up so they won't be like, hey, what's going on with Dead End Sports? you never know. We might have like Q or somebody come fill in and do some sports talks in the next few weeks or whatever just to hold it down. But exactly. Just want to get the fans that heads up.
Summer 17, we taking it off. Also joining us is the homie Ken. What up, man?
Chilling. Ready to put a bow on the NBA season.
No doubt. Let's start right there, man. At the time of this recording, we have witnessed the NBA draft. As we did our podcast last week, we talked about some scenarios and things that could possibly happen, which guy would go where. One thing we did not see coming was Jimmy Butler being traded from the Chicago Bulls to the Minnesota Timberwolves. Nobody saw that coming. There were some rumors and little whispers. I want to say maybe the day of, but things got really hot and heavy as it got closer and closer to the time frame. And then they dropped a bomb on us during the draft that Jimmy Butler would be traded for. I think it was Zach LaVine. Who else was
Chris
in that
Dunn.
Chris Dunn. And I think a draft pick,
yeah.
which ended up being the 10th pick, I think. Let's start right there, man. On the paper, if you look at it on paper, B, did the Bulls lose in this trade?
Yeah, you pretty much just gave up your best player for like nothing, and now I'm interested to see what Minnesota's gonna do with now that they got Jimmy Butler, Andrew Wiggins, and Karl-Anthony Towns, along with Rick Rubio, a point guard that's going to distribute.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Bulls, they're about to just start over, start from scratch. Because, like I said, you just gave up your best player, arguably, second, third best player in the Eastern Conference, to another team. So, yeah, that was bad move on Bulls just for not much. I mean, yeah, Zach LaVine, nice. Chris Dunn is an up-and-coming young point guard. But, are you going to – of course, you're not going to win with that. You're not going to season
right.
You win with that right away.
Yeah, they make the trade, man, for Zach LaVine, who's coming off an ACL injury. Chris Dunn, who's coming off what most would say a very bad rookie season. And the pick that they took was Arizona's Laurie Markkanen. I remember watching him play. The kid can play. But they still don't stack up to Jimmy Butler, man. So, Ken, I got to ask you, man, the Bulls, man, what did you think when you heard this, man? Did they lose in this trade?
Yeah, of course they lost, man. I as soon as I saw it, I was like, what? Whatever was going on within that organization, they felt that they needed to get rid of him. And almost just start over. We've seen Jimmy Butler's trainer come out and say that he know drug dealers with more morals and values, than the Bulls management. You basically gave up, like B said, an all-star, a guy that is not afraid of the moment, a guy that closes, a guy that can go to toe with LeBron, because that's what we're all, we kind of use that as a measuring stick, at least I do. A guy that can go toe-to-toe with LeBron, for a guy that came off an ACL injury last year. Loads of talent, and we've seen what he can do when he's on the court. So the guy can play, but of course you have to take injuries like that seriously. Chris Dunn, like you mentioned, Kyle, he had a poor rookie campaign. But, I do want to go back to before – he stepped on the court. what we saw when he was in college. The guy has talent. He just wasn't able to put it together. And, you know, some people would say Tibbs has a thing about not playing rookies. So it could have been Tibbs holding him back, and we may get a chance to see Chris Dunn spread his wings. You know, you kind of get a guy that can possibly do something that you can build a franchise with, and then you get the seventh pick, Mark Canning. I haven't seen him play, so I don't know what he's about. So, you know, right now it looks bad because you know what you had, and with the three that they got back, you don't know what you have outside of LaVine. Just to sum this up, man, they are a hot mess. They got a coach who can't coach. They got pieces that don't fit. So I don't know what they're doing there, and I think this offseason and everything leading up to the preseason would be interesting to see how they formulate their team.
I was as surprised as everybody was to find out, you know, that Jimmy Butler had been traded. And then, you know, when you hear what he was or whom he was traded for, again, LaVine coming off of ACL. I mean, and what was interesting was that, you know, Minnesota had experimented with Zach LaVine running some point. Obviously, Chris Dunn had a phenomenal college career, but struggled mightily. And, you know, there were some insiders who wondered if he was going to get any better, you know, because he was struggling with his shot and was struggling to get his own shot. Now, again, the marketing kid, I saw him at Arizona. He's good. He was very solid in college. But as you know, this is the pros. This is a whole different ballgame. And you trade him for a guy who this past season put up 24 points, 6.2 rebounds a game, and five assists, you know, to go along with almost two steals. And he only played 37 minutes a game. So a guy who was an all-star, and I mean, he basically carried the Bulls to the playoffs. My thing is, when you trade a superstar, unless you're trading superstar for superstar, you hardly ever do you get, you know, value for value. But I mean, really to get this, I mean, my thing was, and we'd heard some rumors about possibly Jimmy Butler going to, you know, the Celtics, and the Celtics have all of these picks and have all of these assets or whatever like that. And I'm sure, pretty sure when Danny Ainge got the word, he had been like, damn, they gave him away for that. You know, so I was really surprised. I read something earlier where Antoine Walker, former NBA player Antoine Walker, and he gave a quote. And I don't know how close Antoine Walker is to the Bulls situation, but he said, quote, Jimmy Butler is a young guy killer. He's a bad locker room guy. A lot of outbursts took place throughout the season with coaches, with players. You try to build something, especially in Chicago, and he's going to be your best player. He has to be a leader on and off the court, and he did a poor example of that. I think that's why the Bulls parted ways with him, close quote. That came as a surprise. Again, I don't know how close Antoine Walker is, but, I mean, guys in the league talk to guys who, you know, have played and stuff. And, I mean, it's all rumor and speculation and innuendo. But, again, to give up Jimmy Butler for what they gave up, yeah, it's to answer the question, if they lost the trade, yeah, they definitely lost this trade. Now, on the flip side, you're looking at, you know, Jimmy Butler going to the Minnesota Timberwolves and teaming up with Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns. Ken, how good can this team be? How good can Minnesota be next year?
Well, I definitely think they could compete for an 8th spot. What the Timberwolves shown last year is that We already know that they have a lot of talent, NBA talent that can play at superstar levels. We saw that. Karl Anthony Towns is a legit baller. Andrew Wiggins doesn't provide a lot of ancillary stats, a lot of those extra stats that that people like outside of scoring, but he's still young, and we've seen that offensively he can get it done. But what they lacked was that veteran guy that knew how to win games late, because they had a lot of leads in games last year, They just couldn't close the games out. And they would start making young mistakes, which you would expect that to happen with a team like that. So I think with him coming in there, he can stabilize them a little bit more than they have been, because he can kind of keep them composed in tight games, or keep them like in the moment when they have like 10 or 15 leads, so they don't get too cocky and blow it. And also provide a little bit of heart, so they don't get down on themselves when they're down by 10 or 15, and provide the leadership that you will hope to see. Now, going back to what, you know, Walker said, there were reports out of Chicago that Jimmy Butler basically became a superstar. So there is some substance to what he's saying.
Okay.
And that the organization kind of, you know, got fed up with it. And that, you know, he started feeling himself. And, you know, I think Thibs may have been able to keep him, you know, in check. But, man, he's going to a great situation with the coach. He has a history with, a history of winning with. So, yeah, man, I think they can definitely compete for the eighth spot.
There it is. There it is. What about you, B? Minnesota, man, how good can this team actually be?
Yeah, I think, you know, yeah, like I said before, I think now you got them. You got a nice little young big three going with Butler, Wiggins, and Anthony Towns. You got Ricky Rubio, a distributing first point guard. You know, he's not going to take, you know, a lot of bokeh shots. I can't remember. Do they still got Muhammad off the bench? I can't remember how their bench was looking. But, you know, yeah, I can see them definitely being.
Still got him.
Yeah.
And they got that power forward, too. That's pretty good, too.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, they at least working with about a good 7 to 8-man rotation with the young group, you know, core guys. I'm pretty sure Butler, you know, would like the winning attitude that's going to be the wanting to win attitude from Andrew Wiggins and Karl-Anthony Towns. So I think, you know, actually 6th, 7th, or 8th seed. I mean, anything's possible for, you know, for them boys. I mean, it's not like, you know, Ken mentioned it earlier, is the Western Conference, you know, overrated. So if they are overrated, like he mentioned, I can see them getting as high as a 6th seed in the West. You know, if they like, you know, Ken also mentioned about Coach Tibbs being, you know, coaching, you know, Jimmy Butler. So that's a familiarity right there. So, yeah, I can see them getting as high as a 6th seed. I think that's possible.
No doubt. Also joining us is the homie FIFO. FIFO, what's up, man?
Yo, what's good?
Chilling, man. We're just kicking it right here. I want to throw out the question back to you, man. Two parts. Did the Bulls lose in this trade and giving up Jimmy Butler? And the flip side, how good can the Minnesota Timberwolves be?
No, the Bulls did not lose in this trade. Actually,
okay.
I think that it was a pretty much even trade. And this is the reason why. When Zach LaVine was healthy, he averaged 20 points a game. And we're talking about a guy that's under 21 in the league averaging 20 points. What did Jimmy average? 22, 23. So, you know, you're getting the scoring. Obviously, LaVine's coming off of that ACL injury. So hopefully he can get back to what he was. Also, Chris Dunn. Chris Dunn had a bad rookie year. But let's be honest. How much success has Thibodeau had with rookies? None, because Jimmy didn't get playing time as a rookie. Mirotic barely got playing time as a rookie. Rookies and Thibodeau don't go together like oil and vinegar. You know what I'm saying? That's just what it is. Thibodeau likes veteran guys or young, even Luol Deng. You know what I'm saying? Luol Deng, when he first came into the league, yeah, he had a decent rookie year, but it wasn't until about third, fourth, fifth year where he actually established himself with Thibodeau. So at the end of the day, I don't blame it on Chris Dunn. He's going to have a better year. I all but guarantee it. He'll have a better second year than he did his rookie year. And then also they got a draft pick where they drafted Markkanen, another shooter. For Fred Hoiberg's space and pace offense. So I think the Bulls came out pretty well. Obviously, everybody's talking about you would want to get an all-star in return for Jimmy. that typically doesn't happen in trades. You got a potential all-star with Zach LaVine if he can get back healthy and continue to progress. And you got an also potential starter, maybe fringe all-star in Chris Dunn. And then you got another draft pick. So I like it from the Bulls' perspective. Could they have gotten more? Obviously, I don't know. I don't have sources. I don't know what other deals were on the table. But I think they made pretty well. T-Wolves can be damn good, mainly because you have Coach Thibodeau. Last year, they ranked like 25th or 26th in defensive rating, which is unlike Thibodeau. Every time Thibodeau coaches or is on a coaching bench, you know, he's part of a top 10 defense. So I think adding Jimmy Butler is greatly going to increase the production of the Minnesota Timberwolves for a couple reasons. Number one, as a player, sometimes when a coach barks instructions at you and nobody understands exactly what he means or how to execute, it's always good to have a player that knows exactly what the coach wants on the floor, especially defensively. So Jimmy is going to be quarterbacking that defense, making sure Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns and all of these other young pieces understand what Thibodeau expects every play defensively. So I think just that alone, they are going to be a playoff team. I think Jimmy Butler alone vaults that defense to a top 10 defense again for Thibodeau. And I think that when you look at the roster in its totality, I think they still need moves to make. I don't know if offensively they're going to be great, mainly because when you look at Ricky Rubio, he does not have an outside shot. Jimmy is suspect with the three-point shot and just jump shooting in general. Wiggins is suspect, you know, and Karl Anthony Towns is still progressing. So offensively, I don't know if they're going to be that much greater, but defensively, they should jump leaps and bounds, therefore making the playoffs in the Western Conference. Where do they land? I think anywhere between 5 to 8 is pretty much open for them. It just really depends on how well they're going to mesh defensively. But I love it for the Timberwolves because I think the Timberwolves were in a position where they needed to add a veteran that can play. Not a veteran that's going to, you know, play 10, 15 minutes, 20 minutes a game and talk about all this, that, whatever, and teach these guys how to be professionals on and off the court. They need a veteran that can play and actually show them what they need to do on the court. And who better than Jimmy Butler that was groomed and learned and became a star up under Tom Thibodeau. So, I think defensively these guys make leaps and bounds, jumps. I think they make the playoffs. I think they're going to definitely be a team you don't want to play against, but they're still not going to be ready to take that championship step. Like I always say, you got to make the playoffs as a young team. You got to get your behind whooped a couple of times, mm-hmm. and then you'll be ready to take that next step. They need to get to the playoffs. Cat and Wiggins need to understand what playoff basketball is. They need to get beat, and then we'll see the year after if they are able to take that lesson and take the next step.
Yeah, I agree. I think I think you guys made some great points. I think it's with that T-Wolves team, they're young, but having a veteran, and that's the thing we don't see. We don't see a lot of veteran leaders who are still on that superstar level that Jimmy Butler is. I mean, you can make a case that he's, you know, top 10, top 15 player in the league. So, you know, to pair him up with those young guys, I definitely think that this team could go. I'd say, you know, definitely a playoff bound, you know, all things considered, if they can stay healthy and they play defensively, I think they can fall anywhere between the sixth and the eighth seed, maybe the fifth seed, depending on how the West shakes out. But I'm looking forward to seeing this team because I got a chance, and I think I probably saw more T-Wolves games last year than most people. This team is a young, exciting. If you like basketball, if you're, you know, and this is one of the teams that I think people should watch. You know, we heard the whispers and the yells and the screams that the NBA is boring, the regular season is boring. If you like basketball, watch this team because I promise you they're going to be fun on both ends of the floor to watch, and they're going to get after it. And they're young and they're energetic, and you know Thibodeau will have those guys ready on a night-to-night basis. And I think part of the issue, going back to Jimmy Butler, you know, part of the issue was, you know, Jimmy Butler, at least from the outside looking in, looks like he never bought into Fred Hoiberg. And I don't know that the Bulls organization necessarily supports. I don't think there's a situation where they said, okay, well, we're going to choose Hoiberg over Jimmy. I don't think that was the case at all. But I think Jimmy Butler didn't buy in, because part of the reason why he didn't buy in because he's a Thibodeau guy. So, you know, it makes more sense for him to be there. He was, you know, he said all the right things since being traded. I'm interested to see how this team is going to shake out. Moving on, as I mentioned at the top, the NBA draft happened. That was obviously the bomb that happened during the draft. But the NBA draft happened, man. We saw a lot of familiar names come off the board. A bunch of one and done freshmen. My man John Calipari was out there recruiting on TV. We saw a dude show up in a red suit. A whole bunch of things happened with the draft, man. So let's start right there. Let's start with the winners. B, if you had to say this team or that team won, who would you list as your winners for the NBA draft thus far?
I would say that, I guess the obvious, 76ers, getting votes. Me and FIFA was talking about this past Sunday at the Dead End Shoot. Like, you got you a guy now who can, you got a scoring guard, that scoring guard who can also play point guard as well. He's going to also push the ball, kind of help Ben Simmons out whenever Ben Simmons not pushing the rock or playing point. But we all know Ben Simmons is the prime ball handler. He's just not going to be listed as that. But I think that's good that they have that scoring guard to complement Ben Simmons, because we know Ben Simmons is going to be having them zip-worthy passes, man. That's going to be crazy. And you're going to definitely need that off guard that's going to be ready to get buckets. And I think folks is going to be – I'm looking forward to Summer League. I know that's one thing I am definitely looking forward to. I cannot wait to see Summer League and see how some of these rookies, you know, are going to be looking so far. Even though, of course, you're playing against other rookies and guys, walk-on guys trying to get on. But it's just still good to see, like, what these – you're going to be eyeing, like, okay, yeah, he might be something when the season starts. So, but, yeah, I would say Sixers. Just, you know, I mean, and they can't really say that was an easy pick, because there's a lot of people that had the first overall picks and they never been winners. So, but I definitely think Sixers made the right pick by getting folks, man. I think that was the obvious number one pick to get, man. It's just unfortunate for him, you know, him playing out in the West Coast, and the fact that his team sucked. Washington has sucked. We didn't get a chance to see much of him ball, you know. So, you know, this is gonna be a lot of people seeing him first time once this NBA season starts. A lot of people gonna see, okay, let's see what this number one pick overall pick was all about. So, yeah man, I think Sixers got the right choice, man. It was either him or maybe a small four position. But I'm glad they went with folks as the number one pick. So they came out for winners for me.
Okay. What about you, Ken? Who do you think were some of the winners with the NBA draft?
For me, I like what the Kings did, man. You know, they got Fox, they got Justin Jackson, and they got Harry Giles. And Harry Giles is the one that I'm looking at, and probably will be the guy that I'm watching the most. Loads and loads of talent, career derailed by injuries. But they're saying if that knee gets right, he can get back to close to what he was, then they may have gotten a steal in the draft. So if that could be part of the future in Sacramento. And then you already know they got Buddy Hield over there. So they got some nice pieces, man. So nice come up for them if the talent works out. I like the Mavs getting Dennis Smith at the spot that they got him in. There was a lot of high praise for him. And, you know, the Knicks passed on him. And he kind of fell into their lap. So if he's the truth, like most are projecting him to be, then that's a good guy to get. I like Monk to Charlotte. You know, the guy's a flat-out scorer, man. Streaky, but I think Charlotte is in need of something like that. You know, I know, the Kemba Walker tends to dominate the ball a lot, and he's used to being the scorer for their team. But it'd be nice to kind of see. Well, it'd be interesting to see how he transitions out of that, or if he can. So I like that pick there. So I think that's a good pick for them.
True indeed. What about you, FIFO? Winners from the NBA draft.
Man, first and foremost, we got to go with the Lakers, man. Getting the right point guard for what they want to do. Look, now, not only is LeVar putting mad pressure on all of his sons, but what Magic was saying, that's a lot of pressure. Talking about, you know, I expect to see a jersey in the rafters and all of that.
Right.
But I've been saying it. Lonzo Ball is the best point guard in this draft. We're not talking about averaging 20, 25 again. We're talking about point guard making everybody around him better, making the right pass, you know, making the game easier for everybody. He's the best point guard in this draft. And I think when you look at the young talent, plus the trade that the Lakers made, getting rid of D'Angelo Russell, bringing in Brooke Lopez, when you see that you have Brandon Ingram, that he's only going to get better. He's 6'6". He's basically a physical mold of Kevin Durant. Then you have Julius Randle, which is not a stretch four, but a four man that can get the ball and push the rock and make plays, a playmaking four, right? You have a big man down low that can get you buckets and has three-point range. Let's not forget that Brooke Lopez has a better three-point percentage than the MVP Russell Westbrook. Don't forget that. And then now we have, what's his name? Oh, man, I'll just, Jordan Clarkson. As now they're starting to guard next to 6'6 Lonzo Ball. I think the Lakers have made the right moves. I like what they've done. They're definitely a winner. Obviously, Philly, adding Markelle Fultz. This was the process. This completes the process. You have your starting five that you drafted, plus some other guys that I still think you can move and make this team deeper. And obviously,
all right, man, I hope this process works. I hope it works.
Hey, look, at the end of the day, the process could only get you talent. You cannot make talent stay healthy, right? Like, those are the type of things, and that's what any basketball player, any professional athlete, you cannot guarantee or understand when something is going to happen. All you could do is pick the best players that will make up the best collective. And so far,
I'm hoping they stay healthy.
Of course. But when we look at the NBA, over the last 10 years, name me a team that has drafted five potential all-stars or five better fit players than the five that they've drafted. You know, in terms of Joel Embiid, I told you guys years ago, real deal Holyfield year one. Ben Simmons is going to be real deal Holyfield year one. Markelle Fultz is going to be good. I'm not going to say real deal Holyfield, but he's definitely good player. Dario Saric, another good player. Jahlil Okafor, yeah, he gets overlooked, but he's another good player. Like they've drafted well. They've drafted great. So hopefully they can stay healthy. If they stay healthy, this team is going to be out of this world in a few years. Ken mentioned the Kings. The Kings did, I think, the best job out of any team. And obviously they were the laughingstock with the DeMarcus Cousins trade at the All-Star break. But I think that they've redeemed themselves so far in the NBA draft. We have yet to see what they're going to do in NBA free agency. But in the draft, I think that they did good. They got, I think, the most aggressive point guard in this draft. The one guy you know ain't going to back down. The one guy that was cut from the 1990s, 1980s, 1970s cloth of basketball player. And De'Aaron Fox doesn't have a three-point shot, but obviously you can develop that over time. But he is the quickest guy in this draft with or without the ball, and he's aggressive. He's going to take it to you. He's not going to back down. I love that. They get Justin Jackson, which I think is a decent NBA player. I think when it's all said and done, I think he's going to be a rotational guy, role player, maybe a bench guy. But I think that the potential steal of the draft is Harry Giles. Obviously, this guy has busted both ACLs and both knees. But when you look at his body, you're like, oh, my God. This guy, you could tell this is the type of guy that's going to put on 15 to 25 pounds of pure muscle when he becomes a grown man. This guy's still a baby. When he becomes a grown man, if he could stay healthy, he's going to be a beast. And when you have a point guard and a big man, you have a starting point to actually turn a franchise around. So I like what the Kings did. So to me, those are the three winners.
Yeah, I agree. You guys stole my thunder, man. Sacramento, I think, did an incredible job. And so you got to give And we've dumped on Sacramento plenty of times on this podcast and questioned whether or not Vlade Divac and the owner know what the hell they're doing. But, I mean, like you said, picking up De'Aaron Fox at number five, picking up Justin Jackson, and then Frank Mason in the second round, and the aforementioned Harry Giles. I mean, those are four solid picks. You know, where those guys land, I'm interested to see, you know, how Frank Mason the third fits in all of this. He was a guy who's the National Player of the Year. And, you know, some think that if he were just a little bit bigger, he probably would have gone higher. But, you know, Frank Mason the third he's a baller, man. And he's a guy who has a lot of attitude. And I'm interested to see how that's going to be when you pair him up with De'Aaron Fox and what they already have there in Sacramento. Like Ken said, Harry Giles is could be the steal of the draft. He was a guy who was, you know, the consensus number one pick coming out of high school, but he's torn both of his knees up. If he can stay healthy, this will definitely pay off for them. Obviously, I think, you know, like FIFO said, the Sixers, they're winners as well because they got the point guard that they needed. They got the point guard that they wanted. As we mentioned, Minnesota Timberwolves, I think they're winners, obviously, from the draft, even though it wasn't necessarily about their draft picks. I think they come out by getting Jimmy Butler. They won in this draft as well. Who else I think was a winner? Obviously, yeah, the Lakers. I agree with FIFO on that, too. You know, getting Ball, you know, getting Lonzo Ball was a huge win for them. I'm not really a fan of what Magic said, you know, the kind of pressure he put on the kid, but, you know, he wants it and he, you know, this is what it is. But by far the biggest winner, and let me be clear, the biggest winner of this particular draft, LaVar Ball. LaVar Ball is the winner because he told y'all that his son was going to the Lakers. He got on national TV and said, you know, him, Jesus, and Zeus had predicted it. So, you know, number two goes number two to the second largest market in the United States. You know, I mean, I guess, you know, LaVar is calling it, man. So he also said that his middle son isn't going to make the NBA. But, you know, I mean, we'll see. But yeah, man, LaVar won. So I'm going to give him his props. He ended up on WWE last night, which was a train wreck, but that's another story for another day. But yeah, another winner, LaVar Ball. Now, conversely, B, who are some of the biggest losers of the NBA draft?
The elephant in the room. My Detroit Pistons, and maybe this is coming from just a personal standpoint.
I'm hey, you sure was people, you were sure mad as hell with
me.
That.
They saw me going off on Twitter, man. But the positive thing about it is, yes, we've been suffering at the 3-point shot for the past like 4 or 5 seasons. So I get it. Yes, you get a guy that's a knockdown shooter, you know, a knockdown shooter and can shoot a little bit off the ball, but. That's college. It's a different animal when you're in the NBA. Can you get that shot off the dribble like he did in Duke? But I mean, he's a tall, lanky two guard that can probably go to small forward if possible. I'm just questioning his athletic ability. I don't know if he has athletic as Gordon Haywood or something Racist. Like that. I would probably feel a little bit more confident if he was like somewhat athletically as gifted as Gordon Haywood with that shot, but. I didn't like that pick. But I thought we was gonna get I forgot the dude's name from Louisville. I was hoping we was gonna get him at the a good athletic two guard that likes to play defense and that can shoot. Nah, he can't shoot a three ball as well as Luke, but he can shoot. He's like one of those guys where you'd be like, oh, you can't leave him open for a long time because once he start knocking him down, he gonna knock him
Donovan
down.
Donovan Mitchell.
Yes, him. There it is, him. That's what it was. I was hoping we got him, but. Or a dude from Kentucky, but then I think the team that picked right before us picked him up. Monk,
yeah.
Yeah, I was hoping we was going to get him, but, you know, that's my losers. that's my loser.
True indeed. FIFO, what about you, man? Who are some of the losers in this year's NBA draft?
Man, that's, you know, honestly, that's kind of tough for me because – I think everybody drafted who they needed to draft. In all honesty, if I have to pick just one loser, And it's not because of who they picked, but because of the composition of that roster. It just didn't make sense to me, was Orlando with Jonathan Isaac.
Okay.
Because you have a lot of big men already there. You have a lot of guys, 6'8 to 6'10, you know, 7 feet type of guys. And I think passing up Dennis Smith, it was the wrong move, because as much as I like who's the crazy hair point guard they got?
Elfrid Payton.
And I remember years ago when he got drafted, I said I liked him. But I think he's the one guy that's holding that team back, because you can play off of him. He's not a scoring threat. Yes, he can defend his position. Yes, he's a playmaker. But he can't make free throws. He can't make a mid-range shot. You don't necessarily have to have a three-point shot, but you have to keep the defense honest. And offensively, he holds that team back. So I think they were in prime position to get you a point guard of the future, because that's the most competitive position in the NBA right now. And if you get a guy that is an athletic freak like Dennis Smith, you get a grinder type of coach like Frank Vogel that I think that can extract the most out of a Dennis Smith. I just think Orlando missed the target there. But again, it's not because of Jonathan Isaac, because I like him as a player. I think he'll be nice. But I think just for the fit of that roster, Dennis Smith would have been a better fit.
What about you, Ken? Losers in the draft.
I have two. So the first one that comes to mind is Ivan Robb, because he went back a year, which is cool, but if he would have came out last year, they say more than likely he would have been a lottery pick. And of course, we all saw he went in the second round. I'm glad he got drafted. Maybe it will motivate him to get better and show everybody that they made a mistake. And he can, you know, parlay that into a payday. But man, like, there's a lesson to be learned there. But you know, but anyway, and the second loser I have is LeVar Ball.
How's LeVar Ball, loser, man?
LeVar Ball, man, he's the loser, man. You get up there talking about the Lakers are gonna go to the playoffs. First year with Lonzo. I heard everything you said, Kyle. I don't disagree with it. And that's why I'm not saying any of that is the reason why he's the loser. But then you turn around.
I forgot about that.
Out of everything that you've did, everything that you said have gotten right, you've been quiet up until the draft. And you just couldn't help yourself, LeVar. You just couldn't help yourself. Let Lonzo have his moment. And you just had to steal the shine. That's all I got.
Losers, man. I obviously, again, it didn't have anything to do with the draft per se, but Chicago loses big time for me in losing Jimmy Butler. I think the Celtics lost some, man. I think if Markel Fultz turns out to be the player that people are predicting that he will be, then I think down the line, you know, Danny Ainge is going to be looking real crazy, because he passed on, you know, drafting him first. And I know, of course, you know, they're going to have to make a decision down the road whether or not you're going to max out a guy like Isaiah Thomas, who's, you know, 28, 29, 30 point scorer per game. But, you know, the thing is that could this kid really be the real deal and be the future? And there's no knock on Jason Tatum. I think, you know, Josh Jackson might have been a better fit for that Celtics team. But Jason Tatum's game is right there, and I think he's going to, you know, do well in Boston. But my loser in this is in saying the Celtics, I think they could have come away with so much more. And we talked and talked and talked ad nauseum about these, you know, these assets. At some point, you got to cash in, man. What good is it holding on to the chips? And I understand that at some point that they will, but when does that point come? Could we could be premature. For all we know, by this time next week, there could be a huge blockbuster trade to go down. I'm not sure. There's been rumors about, you know, them making a run at Paul George, as well as what's the kid from Utah? His name just slipped me. Gordon Hayward. So yeah, but right now, I think the Celtics, I would give them an L for right now. So we'll see. At the time of this recording, last night, the NBA held its inaugural NBA awards show. This was the award show that, you know, where you got named the coach of the year, defensive player of the year, executive of the year, MVP, so forth and so on. It was aired live on TNT. The TNT crew was there, hosted by Aubrey, you know, who I guess did a good job. I really wasn't impressed with what he did, but that's another story for another day. Nonetheless, man, let's talk about some of these winners, man. Mike D'Antoni wins Coach of the Year. B, are you okay with that?
Yeah, I think when we was discussing, like, you know, potential candidates and stuff, like, you know, MVP candidates, Coach of the Year candidates, defensive player, I remember mentioning him as, you know, Coach of the Year, just the way how he transformed James Harden. Like, he made me like James Harden. Like, I was like, man, I actually like James Harden playing the point, the way the offense was just running, man, how they was killing it. You know, we didn't think they were going to be a 3-seed in the West, you know, almost fighting for a 2-seed at one point with San Antonio. So, you know, and win as many games as they won, especially after Dwight Howard going, you're like, okay, you lose a good big guy like him. But D'Antoni just refueled that offense and had them boys playing lights out. So, you know, unfortunately, of course, D'Antoni style, but we're not including the playoffs, but D'Antoni style, they always fall short in the playoffs when they count the most. But regular season-wise, oh, yeah, I definitely had no issue with D'Antoni winning Coach of the Year. I was cool with that. I was definitely cool with that.
What about you, FIFO? Your thoughts on D'Antoni winning Coach of the Year?
Yeah, I think when you look at the NBA and which teams had the biggest jump, it has to be Houston. You know, what D'Antoni was able to do with his system, to go to a team that had his style players. And remember, when D'Antoni went to the Lakers, I was on record saying, trade for Josh Smith, give D'Antoni the type of personnel he needs to be great. But no, they wanted to stick with Paul Gasol and Dwight Howard. And then when we saw it with that personnel, we're like, well, why is Paul Gasol shooting threes in the corner, right? But it's a big difference when it's Ryan Anderson, right? So at the end of the day, it's not that D'Antoni did anything spectacular or completely turned around something. He was just the right man for the job. And what he did, Like B said, because I was over James Harden. He made me like James Harden as well this season. I liked him as a point guard. I liked the strides that James Harden took as a player. Obviously, he still needs to grow as a leader. I don't think he'll ever be that. That's just me personally. But at the end of the day, he did have a profound impact on James Harden. It made him an even better player and made that overall team perform at a higher level. So I definitely give him props for that. But I think that somebody, my dark horse winner for me, was Eric Spoelstra. Who
okay.
The hell thought that the Miami Heat was going to be a viable team?
Right,
and the
right.
type of streak that they were able to catch on? Oh, my God. Come on, man. Who saw that? And I've been saying, Spoelstra was a hell of a coach, even when he had the big three with LeBron, D-Wade, and Bosch, because everybody always wanted to question Spoelstra. Spoelstra has assists. Spoelstra is very underrated in this league. And let this guy get some talent again. I guarantee you he'll be up for Coach of the Year again.
True indeed. True indeed. What about you, Ken? Your thoughts on D'Antoni bringing home the trophy for Coach of the Year?
I was okay with it when I saw it, man. I mean, it makes sense that he did, you know, that he would win Coach of the Year. And I really don't have much more to add than what Ralph or B said. So, yeah, I was cool with it.
Yeah, same here. I was cool with it. I would have, if Spo had won, I would have been cool with that as well. I think, like FIFO said, I think if you look at what the Miami Heat did, particularly the back half of the season, you know, they were one of the teams that played the best, you know, including Cleveland and Golden State down the stretch. They just, you know, didn't have enough to get in as far as get into the playoffs, but man, that's coaching. And I know, you know, a lot of people were down on Spo when, you know, when he had the big three there, LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and D Wade. But Eric Spoelstra can coach. I mean, make no mistake about it. And, you know, although he did not win this award, I'm pretty sure there's going to be one in his future. You can bet on that. What about Draymond Green winning the Defensive Player of the Year award? Ken, your thoughts on Draymond bringing home another trophy?
I'm happy for the brother, man. He said it was a goal of his. He set out to accomplish it, and he did. And in watching some of the games this year and seeing, like, some of the things that he did on the court defensively, man, like, it's amazing sometimes, man, to see a guy impact a game in that way. And I think it was at that point, and I can't remember what game it was, but I think it was at that point I was like, yeah, I think he deserves to win a defensive player of the year. And I would have been shocked if he didn't win it. So much like Russell Wilson being talked up for MVP, a lot of people talked up Draymond Green for defensive player of the year, and I think it was much deserved. So I'm not going to hate on the brother this show. I'm going to let him live.
Y'all notice he said on this show.
Yeah.
That'll speak for the next show. But yeah, on this show, he not going to hate on him. FIFA, what about you, man? Your thoughts on Draymond winning Defensive Player of the Year?
One of the best defenders in the NBA, man. Man could literally guard all five positions. So I don't have anything negative to say. I definitely think there was other guys that were worthy of the award. But when you look at the impact that Draymond has defensively, just look at the what team was that against? Was that against Utah when he had the double block? How many guys in the league can make that play, especially at his size? So, no, man, I have zero issues with Draymond Green winning the Defensive Player of the Year.
What about you, B?
No. I mean, you can always make that argument of Kawhi Leonard, but we all know how great of a defender Kawhi Leonard is. It's kind of like the same thing with – to me, Kawhi Leonard defensively is like LeBron James of defense. It's like you can always throw LeBron James in for MVP or have an argument for him being MVP. The same case you can make for Kawhi Leonard being Defensive Player of the Year, damn near like every year. But yeah, I have no issue with Draymond Green, winning an award. I mean, I have, there's always guys I like defensively, like Patrick Beverley. He's so gutted, man. I love how Patrick Beverley
he's annoying.
After. Yeah, that's a good defender, man. When they annoying as hell, man. I love that. Just me playing, I used to be kind of like that annoying type of guard that just be getting under people's skin or whatever. I love that type of play. So, yeah, Patrick Beverley, Kawhi Leonard, Draymond Green. Like, I have no issue with Draymond Green winning it. Just like Ken and Ralph. It's like, hey, nothing else to say. This dude can literally guard all five positions, just like a la Dennis Rodman can guard all five positions with ease and not have an issue and still make those hustle plays. So, yeah, Draymond Green, hey, give my vote. Represent Michigan State Spartans.
I thought Kawhi would win. If I had a vote, I would have given it to Kawhi. I would have given it to Kawhi just on the strength of, I think we need to at least hear Kawhi Leonard talk, even though, because most of us don't know what he sounds like. But I don't have a problem with Draymond winning. I do have a problem with that getup he had on at the awards. I thought that there was a dress code in effect. That man showed up in, it looked like he had on the same suit that Gucci Mane had on at the BET Awards. And then he had on like some shorts and some loafers with no socks. I mean, he just looked a hot mess. But other than that, yeah, you can make a strong case for Draymond. I had no beef with Draymond winning. And subsequently, well, actually, the other awards that were given out, let me run these down real quick. Eric Gordon from the Houston Rockets won Sixth Man of the Year. To the surprise of some, Malcolm Brogdon from the Milwaukee Bucks won the Rookie of the Year over Joel Embiid and Darko Saric. Giannis Antetokounmpo, there it is, I got it, won the Most Improved Player of the Year. And I think it goes without saying, I think that guy is going to definitely be in the discussion for some future MVP consideration in the years to come. But the main event, the award we kind of waited around for until the end of the night, Russell Westbrook beats out James Harden. to win the MVP after his historic season where he averaged a triple-double for the first time in 55 years that we'd ever seen that happen in the NBA, beating out James Harden. I think Russell Westbrook got most of the votes. I want to say James Harden got like 29 votes. I think Russell Westbrook got 66 votes, if I'm not mistaken. Kawhi finished third, and LeBron got one first-place vote, finishing fourth. B, your thoughts, man. Triple-double. We hadn't seen it in 55 years of the game, but Russell Westbrook is your MVP. Your thoughts on it?
Man, it's so funny every time I had this conversation with my dad. Like, every time we used to talk about, like, you know, someone doing matching Oscar Robertson, my dad was one of those guys. I was like, man, I never think that would happen. I don't think no one ever averaged triple-double again, just like no one ever averaged 50 and 24 rebounds in a season again. So, but when Russell Westbrook averaged this triple-double, in my opinion, I was like, wow, this is no way this dude don't win MVP. But granted, when Oscar Robertson did it, he didn't win MVP. He lost to a Bill Russell. I was kind of like thinking, like, man, they might just end up giving to James Harden because, you know, his team won more games and they were, like, in the top team in the Western Conference with the third best record in the league. So, but yeah, I think it's great, man. I think it's well deserved. I think Russell Westbrook played on 100,000 every game, did not let up, played pretty much every game except for one. I think he cut out one game, I believe. So he played 81 games. For him to have a triple, and he broke the record for most triple doubles in the season. So, I mean, come on, man. Like, anyone, if you don't play ball, you have no idea how hard that is at that level of basketball to do that on a consistent basis, man. That's unheard of. I don't care what you say. People talk down on it and be like, oh, well, he the man on his team, of course. Whatever. You be the man on your team and you try to average triple-double. As a matter of fact, try to average a double-double every for most of the season. And see how people laughing.
Right.
You
know,
man. Yeah. You know, man. Especially at point guard. Being a little guy on the court, bro. Now, that it's extremely hard. It's extremely hard.
No doubt. What about you, FIFO? Your thoughts on it?
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm cool with it. I'm saying, like, are there other guys more deserving of the MVP that had a better season in terms of impact on their squad? I would say, yeah. But at the end of the day, when you beat a record like that and you do it in the way that Russell Westbrook plays the game, because we've seen other guys have a lot of triple doubles, obviously not as many and not to average one, but like the Jason Kidds and stuff like that. You know, I like to say he had skinny triple-doubles, 12 points, you know, 11 rebounds, 13 assists. Nah, this dude Westbrook is getting 40 points, 15 rebounds, 13 assists, 14 assists. Like, bro, like what the hell? Like, you're accounting for, like, 80% of the offense. You know what I'm saying? So I don't have no problems with him getting getting the MVP because he earned it. Again, you know, did he fall short in the playoffs? Yes. Again, is he the most efficient player? No, he's not. But at the end of the day, to average a triple-double in this at the NBA level, to do it in the fashion that he did, I'm saying, and even if you take Russell Westbrook off of that squad, right, like, he doesn't necessarily make players better, but if you take him off of that squad's a lottery team.
Right.
So for him to get him to the playoffs in the West, even though he didn't win 50 games, it is what it is, man. I think this year he definitely earned it.
True indeed. What about you, Ken? Your thoughts on the new MVP, Mr. Russell Westbrook?
Well deserved, well earned. He has a LeBron James type impact on that team. And what I mean by that is that we saw in the playoffs, when LeBron sat down, what happened? Golden State going to 12-0 run. Team falls apart. Can't get anything done offensively. That's what happens when Russell Westbrook sits down for OKC. They just fall apart. We saw it in the playoffs, too. That's what he did this year. Like Rap said, without him, they're a lottery team. They don't make the playoffs. He needed to average a triple-double in order for them to not only win games but make the playoffs. You know, when it first broke, and I was hoping that he won this year, because I know James Harden had one hell of a season.
Mm-hmm.
And I know he's disappointed. I know he's upset that
Ken, not to cut you off right quick, but I do feel a little bad for James Harden, because, you know, just think, last year he was one of the top candidates to MVP, and Steph Curry had a freaking record setting season, lost that, and now he had another even a better season this year and lost to a triple double Russell Westbrook. So I feel a little bad for Harden, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're right. And, you know, when the news broke, the first thing that came to my mind is that Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant both won this year, just in different ways. You know, Russell Westbrook is not an MVP of the league if Kevin Durant is still on that team. Kevin Durant is not a champion if he didn't leave to go play with Golden State Warriors.
Good point.
So, even though KD has the championship, it's not like Russell didn't get anything. It you know, and it's almost like it's a participation trophy a little bit, I guess. but you know, I don't know, man. It's just a weird way I kind of looked at it. Like, man, you lost your boy. He went on. He's wearing cupcake hats. Cut that out, KD.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. Russ started it.
Cupcake. For those of you listening, Kevin Durant showed up somewhere in public this, you know, and people had criticized him, calling him a cupcake in Oklahoma City, particularly the fans of Oklahoma City. So he showed up somewhere in public with a hat on it, and in the hat it had a picture of a cupcake, and there was a small golden ring on top of the cupcake. So, you know, Kevin Durant's having his last lap. Go ahead, FIFO.
Ken, how you coming at KD for winning the ring? Y'all called me soft. Y'all called me a cupcake. And I showed out in these finals. It's not like I rode the coattails of anybody on this Warrior squad.
It's facts.
Honestly, yes, they won because of me. Cut Ken's line off.
He rode their coattails all the way to the finals.
Come on, Ken.
I give you that. He rode their coattails to the finals. But once they got,
I wouldn't even go that far. I think,
you know,
and
you know what? Let's not do Russell Westbrook like this.
Let's talk like about that. So look, my take on Russell. Yeah, exactly. Congratulations, man. I think and for those of you listening, hopefully you got a chance. If you did not get a chance when you finished listening to this podcast, check out his acceptance speech. I thought it was very, very powerful. He got emotional. First and foremost, he brought his teammates up there, which I thought was classy, because, you know, he understands that, no, you don't. And B made a great point. People don't have an idea of how hard it is to get one triple-double. I mean, it's hard as hell getting a double-double, let alone a triple-double, particularly. And FIFO made a great point of someone who's small. Keep in mind, Russell Westbrook is only 6'2", 6'3". So it's not like he's 6'9", like Magic was, or anything like that. Or 6'6", like Jordan, where you can go in there with the trees and get those rebounds. You know, to do what he did was phenomenal. Yeah, man, his speech was incredible, man. He brought his teammates up there. He thanked his parents. He got emotional. Thanked his wife and newborn son. Did not thank Kevin Durant. I was waiting on that.
why would he?
I knew it wasn't coming, FIFO. I was just like sitting on edge, like, I wonder if he's gonna say something to KD. But it was perfect, man. It was a great speech, and he deserved it. And you know, shout out to Harden, man. Harden had an incredible year. And like B said, it's nothing to sneeze at with the numbers that he put up, particularly when you look at, you know, what Houston was. And then, you know, Kawhi had a great year, too, as well. And Kawhi played really well down the stretch. He even cut his braids off. so he looks like a new dude. And then, you know, of course, fourth but not last is LeBron. What can I say? He may have finished fourth, but I think I'm not alone in saying that LeBron James is still the best player in the NBA right now. And there's no shame in finishing fourth. You know, these guys just had phenomenal years. The thing is, what LeBron does is what he does on a night-to-night basis. I think people are kind of desensitized to it. So he makes it look so easy. You know, the man averaged a triple double for the finals. But nonetheless, man, shout out to Russell Westbrook for winning. Like I said, his acceptance speech was incredible. And, you know, for those who think that Russell Westbrook should not have won it, all I say is go back to last summer. Last summer, when we got the word that Kevin Durant was leaving, nobody thought this would be a playoff team. Nobody could have foreseen this. We all thought that they would be a lottery team and that Russell Westbrook was going to have to put up a lot of shots and they weren't going to be able to get it done. And they make the playoffs. He averages a triple-double. You know, hopefully they can get him some help so he doesn't have to do this next year. But incredible year. Salute to Russell Westbrook. Also, before we move on, they also recognized the executive of the year. That was the Warriors GM, Bob Myers. He was named executive of the year. I commented on Twitter. I said I thought he should share that award with Draymond Green since Draymond Green recruited Kevin Durant. And they also did a special tribute giving away the first recipient of the inaugural Sega Strong Award to San Antonio Spurs. I think he's front office guy now, Monty Williams, who tragically lost his wife in a car accident when he was an assistant for the Oklahoma City Thunder a little more than a year ago. And this is the award that was named in honor of the great Craig Sager, who passed away this past December. Moving on to baseball. And before we get into this baseball topic, shout out to the asshole who commented on our YouTube channel and said, "You guys should take the baseball out of your logo because you never talk baseball." Listen, asshole, we're talking baseball now. And whoever said that, I'm not even going to give you a name, but you know who you are, you asshole. Nonetheless, this past week, man, had a couple of things happen, man. We saw Jared Dyson break up Justin Verlander's perfect game by bunting to get on base. There's an unwritten rule that you don't bunt to break up a no-hitter or a perfect game. We also saw Yasiel Puig stand at the plate after he hit a home run, and he watched that thing fly, and he stood there and pulled, took a couple of shots. And then I think they said it took him 39 seconds to get around the bases. So his home run trot was extremely slow. He did that against the Mets, and as he was rounding first base, Mets infielder Wilmer Flores said something to him, and Puig hit him with an FU on his way to home plate. So we've talked about it before, man, but baseball has a lot of unwritten rules. B, I'll start first with you, man. What do you think about these unwritten rules, man?
I think it's good because it spices up baseball. It got us talking about baseball because we've always said, like, every time we're talking about any other sport in the U.S. except for baseball. So I like when they have these unwritten rules because it keeps the game spiced up. It keeps us talking about it whenever some drama happens, because that's, unfortunately, we need some drama to happen for us to talk about baseball because they don't promote their stars enough. So,
right.
I'm cool with the unwritten rules and all the moxie and stuff going on with these players, man. We need to spice up this game of baseball, man. They're keeping that old tradition for too much, and it's not evolving like all the rest of the sports have.
No doubt. What about you, FIFO, man? Your man Puig, he stood there and just chilled and watched that home run go over, man. And it rubbed him the wrong way, man. Like I said, he took his own sweet time about coming around the bases. That's just one of the unwritten rules in baseball, man. What do you think about unwritten rules in baseball?
Man, forget all the damn unwritten rules in baseball. That's why the hell they are where they are in terms of the major leagues, man. Look, the people want controversy. People want talking points. People want the long ball. People want the antics. Why all these old ass antiquated 1900s baseball unwritten rules? Let these guys be the 2017 version of a professional athlete. If that's what they want to do, stare it down. Don't throw me a pitch I can hit out the park then. That's just how I feel. And that's primarily the reason why I don't like watching baseball. It's not that exciting. And then the guys that are exciting, they don't have the antics. You know what I'm saying? Like that's the major thing with football. And I'm glad that football has lifted some of these bans on celebrations and things of that nature, because that's what the people pay to see. Those are the talking points. That's what makes your sport relevant. Who's this guy, the other guy with the Dodgers that's hitting all these damn home runs as a rookie? He done hit like 24.
Cody Bellinger.
Cody Bellinger.
Like, how do I know about him, but I don't even know his name? I should know this man's name. The only reason why I know Yasiel Puig is because he's from Cuba, and I support all of my Cubans out here doing some things. But we should know Cody Bellinger's. We should be nonstop talking about this guy. This guy shouldn't be abiding by the unwritten rules. He should be watching all of these home runs all out the park. That, like, that's what baseball needs, and they don't promote that. They should promote that. That's a major, major issue for baseball, man. And it's just frustrating. It's extremely frustrating.
No doubt. What about you, Ken? Your thoughts on the unwritten rules in baseball?
Well, I think what we learned is this is why they don't want black folks playing back baseball.
You're right.
Man, you know how we are, man. Like, dog, like, we got swag, man. Because I can imagine, because like, I would do the same thing. But if I connected on one and sent it out the park, I'm showing out. I am taking my time getting across the bases. That's my time. And I'm going to rub it in all the way, the whole game. And you know what? Fix your pictures. You don't want me trotting around? Then, like Ralph said, don't throw me something I can hit out. And it's that simple. And the same thing with Jared Dyson breaking up that perfect game. Hey, man.
Right.
Hey, you're not about to get a perfect game on me. So I'm going to do what I can to make sure that that don't happen. Not on my watch.
Exactly.
So if I got to hit a bunt to break that up, then so be it. Now, I'll let that other team that want to play by these unwritten rules have a perfect game thrown on them. But when the game is over and that final line is going to read one hit.
Hey, you're right, Ken, because what's the objective in baseball? To get on base, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter how you get. When I saw that man and I saw the people getting upset, I'm like, yo, Dyson had to get on base the best way that he could. And we've all seen Justin Verlander throw the ball. I mean, Justin Verlander is one of the best pitchers, not only in the game, but one of the best pitchers of his generation. I mean, that's safe to say. And you got to get on. And he figured, okay, well, hell, first baseman's playing back off. I could probably get this down before Verlander's not going to be expecting it. So I could probably get it past him, drop it in there, and I could get the first base and I'm on. And that's all that you want. You could kind of tell Verlander was pissed. He kind of downplayed it after the game, but I got no problem with that, man. You know, what Puig did, I find it interesting that, you know, a lot of times baseball, quote unquote, purists be on this, you know, make baseball great again tip. You know, man, kill all that. You know, my thing is, and now this was one of the few times where you had a Latin player do something and another Latin player criticize him for it. I don't think, you know, I mean, and Flores, I kind of understand where he was coming from to some degree, but the Mets suck. So, you know, I mean, what do you expect? If you don't want Puig to hit a home run against you, you know, don't give up home run balls. It's the same thing, you know, like guys would get upset about dudes dancing in the end zone in football. If you don't want to see me dancing in the end zone, you know, keep me out of the end zone. You know, so I'm not a fan of these unwritten rules because there's so many unwritten rules in baseball. And baseball needs some spice. It needs some flavor. You know, it's not, and that's not to say that it is not watchable. I think fans, you can bring in casual fans. But when you have guys like Bryce Harper and, you know, Mike Trout, and when those guys can walk down the street, nobody knows who they are or what they look like. You know, that means you're not promoting your stars. And we've talked about this before. And it's just not – baseball really doesn't cook up and get heated until after the All-Star break. And, you know, sometimes with some baseball teams, it's more or less about the team and not necessarily the player. So I'm all for players showing emotion, you know, flipping bats or doing whatever, bringing a little swag to the game. But these unwritten rules got to go, man, because, you know, if – the Mets were really about that life, then Puig would have got plunked the next time that he came up to bat. They didn't hit him, you know, but, you know, they know Puig don't play anyway. So, you know, it would have been a fight, you know, anyway. So it doesn't, I mean, they would have jumped on him like the Migos about to jump on Joe Budden. So it is what it is. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to another edition of the Dead End Sports Podcast. It is time that we put a bow on this week's show. Time for our final thoughts. First up, my man Beezy. Beezy, what you got for your final thought?
Damn you, Detroit Pistons. Damn you, Detroit Pistons. I am a lifelong Pistons fan, and they really ticked me off in this draft. The only thing I can say is I hope that this guy proves me wrong and he shuts me up and I'm looking stupid by the time we in January, February in the season. So other than that, damn you, Detroit Pistons, I'm pissed.
No doubt, no doubt. Next up, my man FIFO. FIFO, what's your final thought?
Summer League, where you at, where you at, where you at? I need you. I need to see all these young cats. This was a deep draft. I'm really interested to see who's ready to compete at this NBA level. I think that Lonzo or the Lakers summer league games, they're all going to be sold out. It is definitely going to be box office.
True indeed. True indeed. What about you, Ken?
I love petty. I like being petty. But damn, KD, man. Man, stop with the pettiness, dog. Like, you know, like I really got words for KD, but I understand that this is his moment. This is what he won the title for, to get some get backs and to be the king of petty. So I'm gonna let him off this time. But if you're still doing this by the time we come back, John McEnroe. Stop hating. Stop hating. Let Serena be great. And, you know, I think it's okay.
Right. Like, okay, why bring man. That up? Why yeah. bring that up? Like, she's not even a man. Like, why right. bring that up?
Because he know that she would probably beat him. So he's a little insecure. But 700, dog? 700? Not like top 100,
right?
Not 750. This dude said 700 male tennis players will be better than Serena Williams if she played. Man. Look, I'm gonna just stop hating. That's all I gotta say. Just stop hating. Cause right now, I that could be something else, but I ain't gonna say what it could be. So I'm gonna just say stop hating.
Hey, man, my final thought, man, the big three has tipped off. I am a fan of basketball, and if you're a fan of basketball, you definitely want to check out the big three. If you're asking what is the big three, is the league, you know, created and cultivated by Ice Cube, where it's 3-on-3. They tipped off this past weekend, you know, in front of record crowds. You know, some of the older, elder statesmen of, you know, the NBA are now in the big three, guys that we used to watch 5, maybe 10 years ago, you know, playing in the NBA, playing in 3-on-3. You know, some of the games got off to a little rocky start. Some of the rules are different from regular basketball, but it's 3-on-3. I love it. I think you want to see a guy like Allen Iverson. You want to see a guy like Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. You see these guys go out there and play because, you know, these guys can, you know, say, okay, well, hey, I'm not going to go that hard. I'm not going to do this, not going to do that. At the end of the day, at the core of who these men are, they're basketball players. And once they step on the court and there's a crowd around the court, they're going to be ready to ball. So anytime you get a chance to check out the big three, make sure to check it out. It's going to be must-see TV for the summer. And another way that the NBA is trying to make sure that they are in the news cycle even as the season has ended. And so far, it's off to a great start. So I can't wait to see even more. That's going to do it for us. Thanks again for checking out another edition of the Dead End Sports Podcast. Once again, for FIFO, for Beezy, for my man Kent, I am your host, 12 Kyle. Thank you for checking out Dead End Sports. We'll catch you guys next time. Peace.
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 Kafifi.
Who?
Kafifi.